Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bard's Virtual Poetry Reading for the Bard's Poetry Revolution. Many of you have been saying that since we're stuck inside, we ought to make the best of it by doing a virtual poetry reading, and many of you have sent in clips to do just that. Oop, I have a caller. I have a feeling I know who that is.
Hi, James.
Why, who is this, good sir?
Well, my name is, that's a long story. But, yeah, I'm Nick Hale. I'm another publisher at Local Gems Press.
It's very nice to meet you. That's a long story.
It's nice to meet you, too. I haven't seen you around the office at Local Gems, so.
Yeah, I don't think any offices have been here. But, yeah, in case you didn't hear him because I was talking over him, everybody, that's Nick Hale, the publisher for Local Gems Press. Like I said, I'm James P. Wagner, and we're going to be doing a poetry reading here. So we've got 10 people on the lineup. The poems are all different shapes and sizes. We've got some people just doing pure recordings of their poetry. Some people actually have used a little bit of a musical background, so that's kind of interesting. So we're going to get started with the first one here by Stacey Savage.
Whispers of Poets Past by Stacey Savage. Somewhere in the library, etched upon a spine, the name of a forgotten poet withstands the threads of time. Somewhere at a table, within an open book, reflections of a wordsmith finally get another look. Somewhere in a graveyard, etched upon a stone, the name of a forgotten poet will once again be known.
Wow. I like the, the kind of whispering, like, haunted mansion effect that was in the background on that one.
Yeah, that was my first reaction, too, even before she started reading. That was really cool.
Yeah, and also, as publishers, I think the message of that poem kind of, we could hope that that's true in a couple of generations. You know, maybe somebody, 100 years from now, will be looking at a library shelf and pick up one of the Local Gems anthologies and hopefully turn to my poem,
And think, wow, people were really crazy back then.
Probably. But, I think that, quite a few poets I know have actually experienced that actually happening, though, because, you look at bargain bins, in bookstores or whatever, or even when libraries are actually, trying to reduce the content or whatever, you look in a big box of stuff that they're selling, you might find, ex-poetry anthology or journal or review from, 1978 or something, and then you actually look at all these people who were writing back then that you wouldn't have known otherwise. So, people sometimes underestimate how, the standing power of print.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite places to look, actually, when I go to book sales, or especially when libraries are having their sales, is, the cheapest, I hate to say it that way, but the cheapest of the cheap, places that most people overlook because they're looking for the new books, the bestsellers, or the classics. But I'd like to go and find, the weird, obscure things that most people would overlook, and that usually includes, small circulation journals and things like that, and weird books with inscriptions.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, stuff that's, not run-of-the-mill, or stuff that, you wouldn't find in a regular book. Those are always interesting hidden treasures. So, so this next poem is by Chris Vinoy, who is the National Beat Poet Laureate and former National Beat Poet Laureate of San Diego. And it's called Two Pints.
Two pints to take me off to sleep and rest my weary head. A cup of tea, then off to bed, will keep this heart from dread. The night will come and hold me here, within her arms so sweet. She'll make me dream and softly sing me off to peaceful wanderings. And if tomorrow should greet my eyes to open another day, I'll sip another pint or two and then be on my way.
I think he's got the right idea.
Yeah, I think so too. In fact, I might feel inspired right now. I think I'm going to head up to the fridge. I'll be back. No. Wait,
yeah.
I have to stay here the whole time? Oh, well.
I'd say maybe head down to the corner, but maybe not. Maybe DoorDash delivers, you know, pints.
That would be lucky.
That would be. All right, so we got this next one from Kimberly Ray.
These are my characters. Some of them have affairs. Some of them are drowning while gasping for air. There's a hint of something there that may never be. Nothing more than a simple connection between you and me. These characters have flaws, that is true. These characters may be similar, but trust me, they're not based on you. These characters are simply fragments of feelings, fragments of fleeting moments that once upon a time I wish I was there. Sometimes it's just a story that we can all relate to. Someone needed an escape, and this was the route that ensued.
The title of that one is called Basis of My Characters. And, yeah, I think that's something. I was actually just having a conversation that kind of was similar to that poem the other day with somebody. Actually, you were there, about, you know, when you... you get in, you know, you're the inspiration for a poet or a writer, and then suddenly you end up in their work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's sort of connected with me because I know that whenever you write anything, and I don't write fiction, so I don't get this as bad, but anytime anyone I know sits down to read something that I've written, they're scrutinizing it because they're trying to figure out where it came from. It drives me nuts. It's why I hate when, like, close friends and family who aren't really into poetry read my stuff, because most of the time the stuff I've written came out of thin air. And so they're all sitting there trying to decode it, and that sort of resonated with me due to the idea of somebody trying to study the characters that you've written and figure out where they came from rather than actually just appreciating them as a piece of the story.
Yeah, or how about, you know, the other thing where, like, they tend to forget with poetry that sometimes the narrator of the poem isn't the author of the poem.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if you get up there and you read, like, a dark poem, you know, and then people come up afterwards and they're like, are you okay? You know, like, you know, you're not
right,
having,
yeah,
like, subtle thoughts or something, are you? And it's like, no, it's a character in the poem. It's not me, necessarily.
Yes. Do you need help? I've actually had that happen. I mean, I know you know this story, but maybe some of the listeners don't. I wrote a poem about somebody who went through the tragic loss of a friend when they were a child, and it was completely fabricated. It was not something that happened to me or somebody I know. It wasn't something I'd gone through, but I brought it to a workshop, and several of the people, until I mentioned that, seemed very, very concerned. I felt almost guilty, like, writing this thing because this didn't actually happen to me, but at the same time, it wasn't like I was pilfering it from someone else. It just was a story I made up.
Yeah, I know. You can do that in poetry, and it's okay, and it isn't necessarily inspired by your own life or anybody else's life.
Yeah. The key is to keep it, like, respectful of the experience. I mean, you know, just try to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who experienced it. Don't just be like, oh, yeah, this bad thing happened to me, and make it sort of ridicule it. Then it comes off as ungenuine. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, speaking of some intense poetry, next up we have Mark Rosen reading Kaina.
Kaina. Tonight I journey through the first ring of the ninth circle of hell, reserved for that which is foulest of foul, the betrayal of kin. I keep vigil and read aloud each name, age, date, cause of death, and the proof that evil has triumphed yet again, as the murderers got away with and are celebrated for murder. As I speak the names aloud, one of a scant few willing to mourn the unwanted and unloved, as I bite back my tears that threaten to stain the page I read from, as I repress the urge to scream in helpless fury at a world that loves murderers and hates the dead, I remember why I continue on. We must mourn the dead and fight like hell for the living. Bereft of means to cope, I finally break. I lose that struggle, and the tears force themselves out for any and all to see. I'm only one man, only one mourner, warring against the cold indifference of all mankind, and I cannot win alone.
Like I said, speaking of Mark Rosen and intense poetry, I forget the actual name of the vigil that that's written for, but I know it's written for a vigil for, you know, disability rights, advocacy for disabled people who are actually, through either some neglect or action of family members, actually lost their lives, and it's a decently large number. So every year there's a specific day where they actually have, like, a solidarity vigil about that, and Mark wrote that poem for that, so... Yeah, pretty heavy.
Well, yeah, I almost wish that we had Mark to sort of explain what was going through his mind or what he was feeling as he wrote that, because even in his reading, you can feel, like, the emotion that he's going through just rereading it. Like, you can feel like it's affecting him as he's reading it. And I know he has a couple of poems that I've heard him read that sort of have that effect on him, and it's always really powerful to hear him read them.
Yeah, oh, Mark and Chad actually just told me it's for every March 1st, and it's called the Disability Day of Mourning. So, yeah, I've heard him read that poem quite a lot of times, and it almost seems like he gets more emotional every time he reads it. So, pretty good in terms of the power. Not the subject matter. The subject matter is, a little bit different, but the performance, yeah, definitely is good, and, you know, it's a really heavy topic, so it's, you know, poetry. This is why I love poetry. It can make you really happy, it can make you really sad, it can make you think, it can do all sorts of wonderful things, or horrible things.
That one, I think, at least, kind of takes you on the tour of both, because it's like, it makes you sad, but at the same time, it makes you feel better about being sad because there's somebody else who's just as sad. You know what I mean? It's like that. I think goes for a lot of sadder poems where it's like you're accompanying the journey. Like there's this other human who's also dealing with the same stuff.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of Mark's disability related poetry that comes from, you know, his own experiences, and it's always really powerful, and you could tell. Because, you know, we've obviously through Perspectives, we've done a lot of disability-related poetry, and it's always the people who are reading from personal experience that, you know, not only does it come through in the writing, it comes through in the reading, if you're fortunate enough to see the reading also. So.
Yeah, definitely. Like, all the technical knowledge about writing, all the sort of the art or finesse of the craft of poetry, they cannot stand up to personal experience. And when somebody actually has a genuine experience with something that they're writing about a topic, even if it's not a heavy topic. But when you can actually feel that genuine feeling come through in the writing, that's, I think, in some ways the most important thing to writing good poetry.
Definitely. Well, that's why there's that old adage, you know, write what you know, which doesn't necessarily mean,
yeah.
You know, only write exactly what you know about, because, I mean, you know, I don't know how many people were on, you know, fiction writers were necessarily, you know, in intergalactic warfare or anything like that, but, you know, obviously the writing is more true when it's something that you have personal experience with, so.
Yeah, right, so definitely.
This next poem we have is actually one of those really cool, like, you know, music-poetry fusions that I was talking about. It's by Mary Phillips. So, and what was the title of the poem again? I think she says it, so she'll say it in there. You know, sorry, Mary. I think she says it. If she doesn't, I'll find it. And
I'll...
He remembered the spongy tuft of grass, the ruddy clouds that ushered in twilight. He remembered the song nature had sung to him one holy night. He remembered the music of the forest. She had heard it too, notes swirling, ascending like incense and dripping down in syrupy splendor, bending the landscape of their thoughts as he loosened his tie and she unclasped her hair. They remembered the roaming hills of younger years, the small log cabin, the scent of pine slipping through open windows, banana bread baking in the oven, the front porch, the crooked steps leading to the cool of unscathed earth. But time had clutched as ambitions arose, like nettlesome insects clamoring for time and slices of their heart. Within and without, vibrated over a vast, deep valley, sublime and magnificent, as they once again felt the tuft of grass, the smoky cerulean sky, the simplicity of life. They felt the urge to run or fly, yet remained still. For God had, after all these years, remembered them, had once again opened their ears to the music of the forest.
I feel like we've also had very similar thoughts. I really like that one. I think the music definitely added a lot to it. Like, I've heard some poems where it was almost or matched the music where it's almost better without the music, but I think with that one, they work so well together. So I would love to hear it read without the music just to get a feel for how it goes without it.
Yeah, and the title of that one, by the way, was The Music of the Forest. So, yeah, sorry to hear it after the poem, but I think because of some of the lines in the poem, it's kind of self-evident, and, you know, yeah, a title like The Music of the Forest, having music in the background kind of helps. I also know that actually Mary's husband is a musician, and I think that was his music that she paired it with, so kind of works well.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about poetry is, like, it's one of those, you know, it's kind of like a blank check in a lot of ways, because you can combine it with, you know, so many different things that will just enhance it, you know, like, I mean, in Japanese forms, you know, obviously, you know, they have, where you combine a poem with art, you combine a poem with music, or combine a poem with drama, it all becomes, you know, like haibun, you know, things like that, it becomes a different form entirely. It's like, you know, 1 + 1 = 3.
Right. Well, I mean, in America, they combine a poem with art, and it's a greeting card. Okay, that was going to be a bad joke. They, you know, we have all these different mediums that it blurs the line. I mean, look at Shakespeare. That's only one example of people who used verse in their drama. You have a lot of music that's arguably poetry. A lot of Leonard Cohen's songs, for example, started as poems. So there is a lot of blurring of that line.
Yeah. Honestly, I would say, though, that even though that was meant to be a joke, Hallmark cards, you know, a lot of them are poetry. You know, what I always love is how, you know, you have in corporate meetings, you have, like, these, you know, little, quote-unquote, inspirational mantras or, you know, like, you know, empowerment sayings, or there's always, like, some other word for it so that they avoid the word poetry, almost like if you label it poetry, somehow it's going to, you know, like, curl up into a ball of fire and, like, consume the room or something, you know, but, you know, it's like people
well,
do
well,
everything.
Like those motivational posters.
Yeah, exactly. It's like poetry is in so many things that are day-to-day. It's just that it's not called poetry. You know, it's like the 20th century really gave that word a bad connotation, which luckily people are getting over it. But it's just funny how, you know, you don't call it poetry. You call it something else, and suddenly it's, you know, I don't know, more marketable.
Yeah.
You know.
The greeting card joke.
The what?
No, I was going to say the greeting card joke actually reminds me of a professor I had when I was in college. I took two poetry writing classes, and this professor would that's what he would call dad poetry. He had a special thing for not liking poetry with rhyme at the end, you know, end rhyme, and he would always call it a greeting card verse. So anytime he saw poetry he considered bad, it would be a greeting card verse.
That's funny.
It makes me laugh because some greeting cards are actually not half bad for poetry.
Yeah, some of them are great. A lot of them don't rhyme, you know.
Some of them are not very good. I'll give you that.
Yes, you know, it comes in all shapes and sizes, you know. But yeah, it is always funny, like, you know, like, because, you know, like, you know, teachers and professors do get those particulars of the likes and they don't like. And it's funny how these days rhyme is almost considered like a sin in a lot of cases, but. You know, but I know plenty of poets who use rhyme absolutely perfectly. So, you know, I would say rhyming isn't a sin. Just bad rhyme is a sin.
Yeah.
So, okay, this next poet that we have, she's the editor of the Blue Heron Review, and she's, you know, notoriously known for her random acts of poetry, Christina Norcross.
All We Can Carry by Christina M.R. Norcross from the chapbook Amnesia and Awakenings, Local Gems Press. All We Can Carry. I never underestimate my hands. They are strong. They can make things. My shoulders carry burdens. My heart remembers the roundness of now and the dark cavern of an uncertain then. With words meant for mending, I sew things back together. Back before each month brought the red reminder of possibility, solutions were birthed outside of me. Plates were magically washed, the cupboards automatically filled. My body was waiting for the other side of the door, asking my mother the how-tos of the seven-day visit and the why of it all. Once my body filled and shed many times, I became the offering, a guide to the mystery. An invisible map for life emerged from a seed, and I claimed my place in the tribe of women who could lift things and carry them on broad shoulders, as if no one thing had any weight at all. Go Find Her, from the chapbook Beauty and the Broken Places, Kelsey Books. Go Find Her. I'm saving a love letter for you, for the you who only sees mirrored flaws and faded, forgotten beauty. I'm saving you tender words of appreciation for the you who counts imagined mistakes like pennies in a big glass jar, for the you who needs to be reminded of the sheer glory of your existence. I'm saving a love letter for your hands, the ones you fidget with when you worry. Let me hold them. Let me cover them with soft lamb's wool gloves. Let me celebrate what you have forgotten for the you who holds lack in a beribboned brick parcel, balanced on curved, burdened shoulders. Let me remind you that when you sing, leaves reach in earnest like reaching for the sun. For the you who blooms and bends just to provide someone the patience of a sea of grass, for the you who presses pause to say thank you or I see you. I am saving this love letter in my pocket in case you forget to cherish the self who walks in light with you, the one who embraces the fullness of your worth. Go find her.
Yeah, that one had two poems in it, so yeah. You know, Christina's a pretty active poet, and she's actually a proponent of being helpful to other poets, in her community and many other communities out there, in Wisconsin and beyond. She was actually, one of her book launches was actually the first Wisconsin Bards Against Hunger. So, we thank Christina for that and for all the other stuff she's done.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed both of those. I don't have much more to say other than that I enjoyed them. It was is nice, though. Christina and I have interacted on Facebook. She published me once in the Blue Heron Review, and I've published her a few times in some of our anthologies. But I've never gotten to hear her voice. I've never gotten to hear her actually read her poetry. And, sometimes when you read something on the page and then you get to hear the person actually read it, it has such a different effect. And I say this at basically every anthology launch I go to because I'm reading so much poetry all the time. And, I'll read through something and then I'll hear it at the launch and it's almost like I never seen it before, even though I've read it like 3 or 4 times. So, Christina, if you're listening, thank you for sitting in your poetry and, letting us hear it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny because we're sitting here, we're like, oh, we're hosting this, but, I'm getting lost in hearing the poetry, too, so sometimes I forget, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to say something,
Yeah, we have to stop. We have to talk now. We have to work. We can't just enjoy it. Well, I mean, it's still fun. The one thing I do miss, though, I will say, is the clapping after. Hearing everybody else with me appreciate it.
Oh, no, you know what? I should have put in a clap track, We'll have to add that for the future.
Yeah. Well, I guess if people are really enjoying it, they could always just comment on Facebook. So if you are enjoying one of these pieces, sort of give us a virtual clap. Or not us, but the people who sent us their poetry.
All right. So this next one is from Catherine Goddard, who's actually down by you in Nova Bards. And I think there's two poems in this also.
Submitting by Catherine Goddard. I submitted because I saw defenestration in a World War II detective novel and had to look it up. The same day, I discovered a journal of the same name, so I sent the poems in, thinly clad, barely edited but mine. That's no joke, but the timing. Oh, timing is a funny belt we loosen as we age. See, we see things, connect things, think about things like donuts and fish bait and carburetors all in the same slide. Some weird PowerPoint that misses the point, yet we keep presenting, opening the theme wider, trying to explain why. Tighten it up a bit. We used to be able to plan better, things like outings and orgasms, but now we stop at sketchy mini-marts, frown suspiciously at the toilet before taking that fifth leak and wonder if crabs on the seat is a myth Mama told us when she told us to hover. And orgasm, well, we won't go there. Big Pharma has done it for us, though if I were a man with a 4-hour erection, I'd definitely take a selfie in the ER. But alas, I digress, regress, slip into the scatological and sexual underworld of gray matter come undone. That's what happens after a while. Don't let anyone kid you. You give in and let more out when you're older. Release, fall out of the window and otherwise. Boom. Boy, that cuckoo clock is loud. Comma, and. If I were a comma, would I opt for Oxford use? Would I find AP and ignorant Yahoo mucking around in muddied sentences? Or would I merely slide from the pencil tip, smooth as poetry, and drop myself quietly before the and? Do you understand now what keeps me up at night? Not everyone can become a comma, right?
Can't become a comma? Well, there goes my hopes and dreams. that's what I always wanted to be when I grew up. I was like, you know, when I was five, I was like, Mom, when I grow up, I want to be a comma.
See, at first I wanted to be a semicolon, but, you know, I decided I need to be more ambitious, so I became a colon instead. That was kind of like a doctor joke where people were saying, oh, you know, I couldn't settle for being a nurse or a paralegal. I had to become a doctor or a lawyer. But it sounded like it was going in the wrong direction, so I figured I had to explain it so people didn't get the wrong idea.
Yeah, I know. And that first poem there, I mean, it reminds me, you know, like there was something else I read, you know, like lies that my mother told me or whatever, and it was just, you know, like all sorts of stuff, like you know, like sitting next to the TV screen, you know, and you know, will make your eyes, you know, your eye thing, or oh, your face will stay that way, stuff like that. So, you know, hearing all those things in that poem, that, you know, it brings back a lot of memories. I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, or like, you know, if you lose a tooth and you put it under your pillow, you'll get some money. Yeah.
I don't know what kind of parents you had, but I got money when I put my tooth under the pillow.
Yeah, I did, but it was because they put it there.
Well, I know. But I was going to say, okay, at least they did put it there. You're like, you know, that would have just been horrible. It's like, oh, yeah, put your tooth under the thing and you'll get, some money, and then you go looking for the money and there's no money there. And I'm like, well, why would they tell you to do that if there's money?
No. There's no money. There's just a tooth.
Or worse, nothing maybe they happens. Took the tooth and they didn't leave you any money, you know? You know, or maybe they took the tooth and they left you with an interest bill.
That would be pretty bad. Yeah, you're getting to be 6 years old. You can pay for your own way now. You can take care of yourself. Have fun.
Well, there's probably some insurance companies out there that would love to for six to be the cutoff, but that's a whole other conversation.
Just some.
So the next poem that we have is from Matthew Powell, who's one of the sand dune poets down there in the Del Mar Peninsula, a little bit north of you, a little bit south of me. So give it up for Matthew Powell.
Dad, you just won't let me be. You smother me so I can barely breathe. I wish I wasn't a part of your family tree. Your rage has the force of a deadly storm. My branch has been badly torn with those hurtful words and habitual lies. You make it seem like a tragedy, the fact that I was even born. Compared to your perfection, I'm nothing but a travesty. I'm the apple that fell smashed on the ground. No love shown, only rejection. I'm bruised and I'm wounded because you were never around. I could beg you for help, you on your high horse, but you wouldn't make a sound. Whenever I fall, I put out my hand. You do nothing but kick me when I'm down. My heart has been punctured and my back has been stabbed. You just bide your time until I'm 6 feet underground. When they offer you pity, you'll pretend that your heart has been lost. But the only thing on your mind is how much will a funeral cost?
Well, speaking of what kind of parents do you have?
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty powerful. And, you know, I hesitate to say relatable because hopefully we don't all have a parent who, you know, is... That is quite that intense, but I do think the general message of kind of, you know, wanting somebody's approval, whether it's, you know, a parent or a grandparent or somebody in the family or even not necessarily a family member, but, you know, like I feel like we all can relate to the idea of wanting somebody's approval that we're not necessarily getting.
Yeah, definitely. And that was really powerful. And it was also a good example of rhyme used well, you know, going back to what we were talking about before. And it all sort of builds up to that last line. And I think it was great.
No, definitely. That last line was definitely powerful.
Yeah.
So, all right. So this next poem. poem is from Jamie Colangelo, who's actually a member of the Samantha's Little Bit of Heaven workshop group that I co-facilitate. And actually, Mary Phillips is also a member of that. So I'll give this up for Jamie Colangelo.
My God, My Strong Tower, written and read by Jamie Ann Colangelo. It was a beautiful day without a cloud in the sky. My sight extends far away. My spirit leaps to new highs. Suddenly, without warning, shrouded in a cloud cover, a perfect storm was brewing. Ominous waves hover. The water bears down on me. Salty splashes burn my eyes. Vision gone, I cannot see. Will this be my demise? My heart's pounding, gripped by fear. Fiercely trembling, I cower. Oh, my God, come near. Gird me in your strong tower.
Well, I think that poem probably resonates a lot right now, considering what's going on out there.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, also another good example of Ryan done well. In my opinion, a lot of good Ryans, they will sneak up on you. You don't even realize that's what they're doing until towards the end of the poem. You know, the first time you hear it, it's kind of, it takes a couple of rhymes before you can realize that that's what the poem is doing.
Yeah, and sometimes the pattern isn't always, you know, prevalent in the first time you hear it, like you might think, like, you don't know if it's going to be, like, you know, a couplet rhyme, you know, or a quartet rhyme, you know, stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next poem, this is actually a little bit of another one of those musical treats I was talking about, and actually this is by our local poetic gem here on Long Island, J.G., who is incredibly talented at performing and reciting classical poems, and in this one, this actually, he didn't write this one himself unless he's, you know, a couple hundred years old and named Lewis Carroll. He's, you never know, you know, maybe he has an herb he can sell you, you know, for
well,
only.
I mean, Lewis Carroll was a pen name, so he could be.
Never know, you know, I mean, J.G. recites, you know, the Road Not Taken all the time, and I always tell him, like, dude, you should publish that one, bro. So this is a recitation he's done of Jabberwocky that he's also combined with some music, so this one's interesting. So, is this one here?
"'Twas Brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe.
"'Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch."
He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree, and stood a while in thought. And, as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock, with eyes of flame, came whiffling through the tulgey wood, and burbled as it came. 1-2, 1-2, and through, the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back.
"Then hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, calloo, callay!"
he chortled in his joy. 'Twas Brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe.
Thank you.
I like that one. I would like it a lot better, though, if there weren't so many made-up words in it.
You'll have to lodge a complaint with the author of that one. But, yeah, no, I really like the effects he did on that one, you know, like where he had, you know, first he said, you know, he talked regular, he had, like, the voice, the you know, the sound effects with his
voice. Yeah, the voice distortion was great. It was a really nice touch. And the production quality of it was pretty high, I would say.
Well, he actually released that on a CD with a bunch of other stuff or whatever. I don't actually remember what the other ones were on there, but yeah, he definitely put time and effort into doing that, and you can tell. So
yeah.
You know, and the music kind of really fits with the mood of, you know, like the Jabberwocky and, you know, the kind of silly, crazy funhouse mirror type.
Definitely. So, you know, this is one thing I like about the virtual reading versus a real life reading. As much as I miss the applause and the crowd and everybody being there, the ability to do things like, you know, music or crazy voice distortion in your poems, it can lead to some really creative things.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I guess you kind of technically could do it in live in person, but you'd need a lot of equipment for it. So, yeah.
Hey, it'd be kind of annoying.
Yeah. So, Nick, do you happen to have a poem available that you might will be wanting to read on air?
Sure. So I had a couple. I was having a hard time deciding which one, but then I started telling that story about that one at the workshop, and I don't think I've ever read that in a reading, so I'm going to give it a shot.
Okay.
So again, quick disclaimer for anybody who might be listening and might be concerned afterwards. This is totally made up, not about somebody I knew. Promised. They found your body in the spring on the bank, a perfect tableau posed beneath the elm, tall grass like flowers in your hair. When we were small, our lives were forever. You'd chase me up the street to promise someday you'd marry me. And our kids, our girls would be Nobel Prize winners. Our boys would run up the street away from pretty girls planning to marry them. You even had names. This is how I wish I remember you. I remember your face pressed against the ceiling of ice. The blue eyes whispered thank you as the life fled from your lungs, dragged you down, still so small, sharp as the ice. My small hands try to break. That refuses to give you back. We were too small. I'm big now, big and alone in the city of estranged families. I see your eyes in the crowd sometimes, forgiving, blue, and hopeful. I wish with all I am you'd come to fulfill your promise.
Oh my God, are you okay?
I am okay.
Sorry, had to, based on the story.
Right. So, I mean, and that was actually part of a NaPoWriMo challenge that I did a few years ago, and the whole idea was that each of the poems that I was writing was written from the perspective of this character who, like, some of them were written by him and some of them were sort of in, you know, his thoughts, but some of them were actually poems the character was supposed to have written that sort of tell the story of this person moving to a big city and sort of trying to adjust to that life, and, you know, and so that was sort of part of his backstory. I mean, the rest of the poems were pretty bad. I think that's the best one that I wrote out of all of them. So,
Yeah, no, you know, it was good, and, you know, I mean, yeah, that is definitely a good exercise, is sometimes, you know, to try to put your mindset into the mindset of somebody who's completely different and completely not like you, you know. I know that some people, you know, act like, you know, you're not supposed to do that these days, but honestly, I think that, you know, how else are you really going to expand your mind, you know, like looking at things from other points of view and trying to really, you know, dive into that, actually. I feel like that's helpful on a lot of levels.
Yeah. Exactly. Like outside of writing, it's just a good exercise to sort of help you empathize with other people and see where they're coming from, especially when there is a disagreement.
Definitely. You know, there are three sides to every story. So.
And none of them are right.
The what?
And none of them are right.
Well, no, that's
they're
not
all
true.
Wrong.
My side is always right. You know, it's the other ones that are definitely not. You know.
Well. Yeah, my side is always left, okay?
And their side is always up, so, you know. All right, so I got one more recording. This poem is by some schmuck called James P. Wagner. I figure since we're doing the virtual reading, I might as well actually play the recording that I put together a couple of months ago.
Oh, man. If you had told me you were going to do that one, I would have brought the one that I wrote that was inspired by that poem.
Well, if you want to find it, you know, quick, you can read it. You can read it afterwards if you want. Yeah, because I wrote this poem, and then this guy goes and writes a response poem to the poem that actually made me laugh out loud at one point when I read it at his house. But that's beside the point. Well, this poem was actually this is inspired by a true story. It was one of those days when something just happens, it hits you, and you're like, I got to write about that. So, but yes, I am okay. It's a little bit of a happier topic than the other one, so you don't need to worry. But yes, so this is a Stolen Flower.
Today I gave a flower to a complete stranger. No strings attached, no ulterior motives, just a nice gesture for an older lady sitting by herself who looked lonely. She was thankful for the gift, claimed I was such a nice young gentleman that I had made her day. What she didn't know was that the flower was stolen, in a manner of speaking. I grabbed it on impulse as I was sitting down in the lobby area of a hotel meeting space. You see, today I went on one of my odysseys, exploring the road between business trips. I like to take a day to myself from time to time to sit back and observe before the hustle and bustle begins. I was wandering the halls of a casino after a few rounds of poker and came to the hotel area, past the main lobby, went up the escalator to the meeting rooms. I had no meeting, at least at this time or in this hotel, but I've walked these types of hallways so often on the way to my own business that every so often I like to pretend that I'm there for a purpose when I'm not, to just walk the halls and enjoy the decorations placed perfectly for an environmental feeling that most in their stride, including myself, don't normally notice. As I sat there letting people walk by me, wondering if they were wondering what kind of business I might be there for, I saw the flower sitting with many others in a decorative pot on the middle of the table next to me, and in that moment of contemplation and observation, I took it on the impulse that in this moment, even though I was not there on business, even though I was just exploring, perhaps for these very reasons, that I, too, deserved something beautiful. No one would notice the missing carnation, any more than the many who came and went noticed its presence in the first place. It seemed like a perfect pairing for the lonely woman who sat by herself as people passed her by, and in that moment, as I gave the flower to her, it dawned on me that I had not just stolen a flower, I had stolen a moment. I had reclaimed something beautiful for myself and for her. And in this observation and the following moments of contemplation, as I looked a little closer as I made my exit, so many more beautiful things surrounded me. And as I paused, I wondered how many flowers I and everyone else had managed to let pass us by unstolen.
So yeah, that was by this schmuck James.
Oh, that was pretty good. You had some music in there too.
Yeah, though I think some of the music thing, the music track we had tonight, kind of make mine look like grade school t-ball. But I thought that music kind of went good with the thing, and I tried to do that thing where it kind of came in gradually. But yeah, that was based on an actual thing that happened,
yeah.
And I just
Well, I mean, you got to start somewhere. That James guy, you might be able to be a published poet someday.
I know. Maybe there's hope for my poetry career, out there. So did you find the response poem?
I did. So this was actually written based on a true story. It didn't happen to me. But it also doesn't have a title yet. I don't have a fancy recording, and I don't have music in the background. Unfortunately, we might have to fix that. I gave a woman a flower today, not because I loved her, not any more than I love any stranger as a potential conduit for grace, not even because I wanted to. I gave a woman a flower today because I had to. I, with all my wisdom and free will, reduced to a pawn of my own instincts, swept along by fortune like Coelho's shepherd boy, wandering the desert in search of truth, borrowing from one to give to another. I gave a woman a flower today, though it was not mine to give. Borrowed gently from a vase, borrowed violently from a bush, it made me a vessel, and I willingly gave myself over to be a conduit for grace. I know it was a bad idea, taking what wasn't mine and giving it away. I know it was ill-advised, acknowledging a stranger in an empty public space. She could have had rabies or a warrant out for her arrest, but Grace doesn't care about those things, and so I gave a stranger a flower today, a simple gesture, which could have gone horribly wrong if taken the wrong way, but the lines on her face curled upwards, evaporating her loneliness. A shared smile that could draw tears from stone told me I had made her day. I don't know what happened to her after I left, swept up in the current of my own intentions. I left her there alone, but not so alone as she was before.
Yeah, you should title that, by the way. But no, I like that one. But I remember the first time I was reading that poem at your house. She could have rabies. I was trying to read it the same way I read my poem, and the rabies part, I just lost it. But now I'm thinking, well, topical, you know, maybe it was ill-advised. She could have had the coronavirus.
Yes, yeah, I got too close. It was not 6 feet away.
I was actually half wondering if you were going to interchange that based on, you know, the updated current events.
Yeah, I might the next time I read that. Spoiler alert.
Uh-oh. So, yeah, that was the amalgamation of poetry that we had for this Bard's Poetry Revolution virtual reading this evening. And I, for one, am actually really happy with how the poetry went. I think it was a lot of talent, a lot of creativity, you know, and I think that in this, what's going on right now, we need this and we need more of this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I had a lot of fun. Thank you to all the poets who sent in clips for us to play. And if you enjoyed this, or if you want to be on this, or if you want to have more of these, please let us know. You contact us on Facebook. Keep sending us your poetry audio clips. And when we get enough, we'd like to do another one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, maybe if we get enough, we can make this a regular thing for the you know, for the temporary future. In fact, we actually do have a couple of, you know, well, at least one, you know, decent-sized announcement we're probably going to make in a couple of days. It's related to virtual poetry, so, mystery. So keep wondering
yeah.
about that for a couple of days. But yeah,
keep an
in
eye
the meantime,
on those inboxes. I was going to keep an eye on those inboxes. And also,
yeah,
I guess, social media feeds.
Your inboxes, your social media feeds, your you know, notifications and all that. And we will put out another call for you know, for more of these to come in, so keep an eye out for those. So thank you to everybody who sent in. You know, thank you, Nick, my co-host and friend. And everybody out there, stay safe, stay poetic, stay writing. Look out for, you know, submission deadlines and, you know, send poems in, send poems around. You know, we all need the uplift and we all need the positivity. So thank you, everybody.
Good night.